11. The problem of the inner organization of the movement is not one of principle, but of expediency. The best kind of organization is not that which places a large intermediary apparatus between the leadership of the movement and the individual followers, but rather that which works successfully with the smallest possible intermediary apparatus. For it is the task of such an organization to transmit a certain idea which originated in the brain of one individual to a multitude of people, and to supervise the manner in which this idea is being put into practice. Therefore, from any and every viewpoint, the organization is only a necessary evil. At best, it is only a means of reaching certain ends. The worst happens when it becomes an end in itself. Since the world produces more mechanical than intelligent beings, it will always be easier to develop the form of an organization than its substance, that is to say, the ideas which it is meant to serve. The march of any idea which strives towards practical fulfillment, and in particular those ideas which are of a reformatory character, may be roughly sketched as follows. A creative idea takes shape in the mind of somebody who thereupon feels himself called upon to transmit this idea to the world. He propounds his faith before others and thereby gradually wins a certain number of followers. This direct and personal way of promulgating one's ideas among one's contemporaries is the most natural and the most ideal. But as the movement develops and secures a large number of followers, it gradually becomes impossible for the original founder of the doctrine on which the movement is based to carry on his propaganda personally among his innumerable followers, and at the same time guide the course of the movement. According as the community of followers increases, direct communication between the head and the individual followers becomes impossible. This intercourse must then take place through an intermediary apparatus introduced into the framework of the movement. Thus, ideal conditions of intercommunication cease, and organization has to be introduced as a necessary evil. Small subsidiary groups come into existence, as in the political movement, for example, where the local groups represent the germ cells out of which the organization develops later on. But such subdivisions must not be introduced into the movement until the authority of the spiritual founder and of the school he has created are accepted without reservation. Otherwise, the movement would run the risk of becoming split up by divergent doctrines. In this connection, too much emphasis cannot be laid on the importance of having one geographic center as the chief seat of the movement. Only the existence of such a seat or center, around which a magic charm such as that of Mecca or Rome is woven, can supply a movement with that permanent driving force which has its sources in the internal unity of the movement and the recognition of one head as representing this unity. When the first germinal cells of the organization are being formed, care must always be taken to insist on the importance of the place where the idea originated. The creative, moral, and practical greatness of the place whence the movement went forth, and from which it is governed, must be exalted to a supreme symbol. And this must be honored all the more according as the original cells of the movement become so numerous that they have to be regrouped into larger units in the structure of the organization. When the number of individual followers became so large that direct personal contact with the head of the movement was out of the question, then we had to form those first local groups. As those groups multiplied to an extraordinary number, it was necessary to establish higher cadres into which the local groups were distributed. Examples of such cadres in the political organization are those of the region, Gau, and the district, Bezirk. Though it may be easy enough to maintain the original central authority over the lowest groups, it is much more difficult to do so in relation to the higher units of organization which have now developed. And yet we must succeed in doing this, for this is an indispensable condition if the unity of the movement is to be guaranteed and the idea of it carried into effect. Finally, when those larger intermediary organizations have to be combined in new and still higher units, it becomes increasingly difficult to maintain over them the absolute supremacy of the original seat of the movement and the school attached to it. Consequently, the mechanical forms of an organization must only be introduced if, and in so far as, the spiritual authority and the ideals of the central seat of the organization are shown to be firmly established. In the political sphere, it may often happen that this supremacy can be maintained only when the movement has taken over supreme political control of the nation. Having taken all these considerations into account, the following principles were laid down for the inner structure of the movement. A. That at the beginning, all activity should be concentrated in one town, namely Munich. That a band of absolutely reliable followers should be trained and a school founded which would subsequently help to propagate the idea of the movement. That the prestige of the movement, for the sake of its subsequent extension, should first be established here through gaining as many successful and visible results as possible in this one place. To secure name and fame for the movement and its leader, it was necessary not only to give in this one town a striking example to shatter the belief that the Marxist doctrine was invincible, but also to show that a counter-doctrine was possible. B. That local groups should not be established before the supremacy of the central authority in Munich was definitely established and acknowledged. C. That district, regional, and provincial groups should be formed only after the need for them has become evident, and only after the supremacy of the central authority has been satisfactorily guaranteed. Further, that the creation of subordinate organisms must depend on whether or not those persons can be found who are qualified to undertake the leadership of them. Here, there were only two solutions. A. That the movement should acquire the necessary funds to attract and train intelligent people who would be capable of becoming leaders. The personnel thus obtained could then be systematically employed according as the tactical situation and the necessity for efficiency demanded. This solution was the easier and the more expedite, but it demanded large financial resources, for this group of leaders could work only in the movement if they could be paid a salary. B. Because the movement is not in a position to employ paid officials, it must begin by depending on honorary helpers. Naturally, this solution is slower and more difficult. It means that the leaders of the movement have to allow vast territories to lie fallow, unless in these respective districts one of the members comes forward who is capable and willing to place himself at the service of the central authority for the purpose of organizing and directing the movement in the region concerned. It may happen that in extensive regions no such leader can be found, but that at the same time in other regions two or three or even more persons appear whose capabilities are almost on a level. The difficulty which this situation involves is very great and can be overcome only with the passing of the years. For the establishment of any branch of the organization, the decisive condition must always be that a person can be found who is capable of fulfilling the functions of a leader. Just as the army and all its various units of organization are useless if there are no officers, so any political organization is worthless if it has not the right kind of leaders. If an inspiring personality who has the gift of leadership cannot be found for the organization and direction of a local group, it is better for the movement to refrain from establishing such a group than to run the risk of failure after the group has been founded. The will to be a leader is not a sufficient qualification for leadership, for the leader must have the other necessary qualities. Among these qualities, willpower and energy must be considered as more serviceable than the intellect of a genius. The most valuable association of qualities is to be found in a combination of talent, determination, and perseverance. 12. The future of a movement is determined by the devotion and even intolerance with which its members fight for their cause. They must feel convinced that their cause alone is just, and they must carry it through to success as against other similar organizations in the same field. It is quite erroneous to believe that the strength of a movement must increase if it be combined with other movements of a similar kind. Any expansion resulting from such a combination will, of course, mean an increase in external development, which superficial observers might consider as also an increase of power. But in reality, the movement thus admits outside elements which will subsequently weaken its constitutional vigor. Though it may be said that one movement is identical in character with another, in reality, no such identity exists. If it did exist, then practically there would not be two movements, but only one. And whatever the difference may be, even if it consists only of the measure in which the capabilities of the one set of leaders differ from those of the other, there it is. It is against the natural law of all development to couple dissimilar organisms. Or the law is that the stronger must overcome the weaker, and, through the struggle necessary for such a conquest, increase the constitutional vigor and effective strength of the victor. By amalgamating political organizations that are approximately alike, certain immediate advantages may be gained, but advantages thus gained are bound in the long run to become the cause of internal weaknesses which will make their appearance later on. A movement can become great only if the unhampered development of its internal strength be safeguarded and steadfastly augmented, until victory over all its competitors be secured. One may safely say that the strength of a movement and its right to existence can be developed only as long as it remains true to the principle that struggle is a necessary condition of its progress, and that its maximum strength will be reached only as soon as complete victory has been won. Therefore, a movement must not strive to obtain successes that will only be immediate and transitory, but it must show a spirit of uncompromising perseverance in carrying through a long struggle which will secure for it a long period of inner growth. All those movements which owe their expansion to a so-called combination of similar organisms, which means that their external strength is due to a policy of compromise, are like plants whose growth is forced in a hothouse. They shoot up externally, but they lack that inner strength which enables the natural plant to grow into a tree that will withstand the storms of centuries. The greatness of every powerful organization which embodies a creative idea lies in the spirit of religious devotion and intolerance with which it stands out against all others, because it has an ardent faith in its own right. If an idea is right in itself, and, furnished with the fighting weapons I have mentioned, wages war on this earth, then it is invincible, and persecution will only add to its internal strength. The greatness of Christianity did not arise from attempts to make compromises with those philosophical opinions of the ancient world which had some resemblance to its own doctrine, but in the unrelenting and fanatical proclamation and defense of its own teaching. The apparent advance that a movement makes by associating itself with other movements will be easily reached and surpassed by the steady increase of strength which a doctrine and its organization acquires if it remains independent and fights its own cause alone.